Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
What's up, hustlers? Welcome back. This is Andrew Morgans, founder of Marknology. Here is today's host of Startup Hustle, covering all things e-commerce, startups, D2C, marketplaces, you name it. Today, I'm talking with Daniel James from Flight Performance. Daniel, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Andrew. Pleasure to be here. Yeah. Really excited to be chatting with you, man.
Yeah, I'm super excited to chat it up. I think we're going to have a lot to share. I know you guys have had a couple of moves recently, and we'll get into those, exactly what that looks like for you guys. But before we do, a shout out to today's sponsor. Today's episode of Startup Hustle is powered by Fullscale.io. Hiring software developers is difficult. Fullscale can help you build a software team quickly and affordably, and has the platform to help you manage that team. Visit Fullscale.io to learn more. Daniel, coming from LA, I believe that's where you're at today. I love getting to know just like your story before we get into just kind of everything that you've built and what you guys are doing and how you're working with brands today. I know I personally didn't think of being an entrepreneur, a business owner in the marketing, in the marketing industry. And yet here I am. Where's your story begin?
Yeah. I don't have the lemonade stand at the age of two kind of entrepreneurship story, which, I don't know. Seems to be, if you don't have that story, are you even a real entrepreneur? I don't know. I kind of got into marketing somewhat by accident. It wasn't something that I studied or anything like that. I was actually at music college. So music was my first passion. I was in a band. I wanted to be the next Kurt Cobain or Liam Gallagher or one of those. And this was back in early 2000s. I had bit part jobs. I worked in a sneaker store. I worked at a rental car company. I did telesales, which, looking back, a lot of those things actually are quite beneficial, especially the telesales, like the thousand no's for the one yes, mm-hmm. and then figuring out how to sell on the phone. I was selling like window, double glazing window appointments. Kind of a sharky world, if I'm honest with you. But it taught me quite a lot. And then through some fortuitous circumstances, I had a MySpace page for my band at the time, and MySpace was really new at the time. And like I said, through some fortuitous circumstances, managed to get a job at MySpace in 2004, I think it was. So like really early in the world of digital and social. And it was actually MySpace that they brought me out to LA. To meet kind of like the team out in LA, and I learned so much through the teams at MySpace about digital and marketing. And I just got completely hooked on the very simple idea of like a brand putting something onto the internet to drive a consumer action. Like, I found that incredibly fascinating. So if I replay the story slightly, I'd say I was always into like marketing, right? Think about a band. I was always trying to sell the band, get gigs. Like a lot of it was marketing,
album art, the t-shirt designs. You know, I was in a hardcore band for 4.5 years touring, probably. Yeah. Like mine was a little behind yours, maybe like 07 to 2011 or 2012, pretty heavy.
Okay.
But I relate the same thing kind of to my first attempt at a brand, my first attempt at, like, you know, marketing myself. And, you know, from, we played 96 shows one year, we didn't have a manager. So, like, you know, booking those shows, you know, putting the albums together, the art, the MySpace top 8 or whatever, you know, you had the other bands you were like co-marketing with or influencing with or touring with, you know, the flyers that we made for MySpace shows. Remember, like, those flyers were really like, you know, the infographics or images that exist in e-commerce today. You know, we were putting like the flyers were a work of art in some ways, like, you know, just getting people, like, getting it done. That's super cool. I definitely think of MySpace and sharing, because Facebook had just came out too, or at least a little bit after. And so it was really those flyers getting shared around that would be the difference in us having like good shows or not, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. No, 100% agree. It's also quite interesting actually. I obviously have a really good network of people in marketing working at agencies. I feel like we're an industry of failed musicians. there's a lot of failed musicians running marketing companies and working in marketing companies.
Well, I would say yes, failed musicians, but one, we're still musicians. Okay. Number one. Number two, I could have kept going that way. I just like got tired of being poor. Like, you know, I was like doing it. I don't know about you. I was doing it. I was, you know, touring and getting all those connections, but I was just tired. Like, I didn't see a light at the end of the tunnel. When I saw really the business side of it, I got a little less enamored with it. Like, you know, when I just really saw like what it's like at the top when you're just touring, tearing down, setting up and touring and like meeting these guys and girls that are like killing it, but not really killing it. I just kind of lost a little bit of the allure. And also, if you were to put me 10 years later, I think I'd be a very successful musician now.
Do you know what?
With Spotify and YouTube and these things didn't exist. Like, you had to go play shows. Like, you had to go play shows all over.
And 100%.
That was a hard thing to do. But if I could have worked my job and then recorded at night and then worked my job and recorded at night, you know, without having to hit the road, like, it might have looked way different. As someone that understands marketing now, you know, I think you can be almost a solo artist and you know, get views all over the world without ever having gone there. So,
oh, 1,000%. Yeah.
It changed a lot.
That didn't exist back in our day, right? You had to sell CDs, right? There was no Spotify. You could upload stuff onto some like MySpace and stuff like that. But yeah, you literally had to get fans one fan at a time by playing gigs. Yeah, these days it's much.
You had to choose one song on your MySpace page. Like, everyone coming to your page got one song, and that was your song to let them know who you were, what you're about. You know, you were like, you're choosing some heavy metal song or something that's like.
I've actually thought about kind of re-releasing the band as if it's a new band, but just across digital and just marketing it. But then we wouldn't be able to play any gigs because my ex-band members, you know, live in England and all this sort of stuff. So.
Well, there's a band called Four Giants. I'm obsessed with them. F-O-R Giants. And it's just two guys, two engineers. They live in different parts of the country and they just like write music online.
Okay.
It's metal. It's like, you know, a full band. They never tour. They've never toured. And I'll probably never get to see them live. But I love their stuff. I just put it on. It's instrumental metal, you know, so
Yeah.
No vocals or anything, but good stuff to work to, you know? It's two guys that I'll never get to see perform live, but like, you know, definitely one of my favorite artists. So I don't know if that's any encouragement, but
okay, there you go.
It's just changed today what people enjoy, you know.
Maybe I'll do it.
So MySpace brings you in. You're like getting to know like at the beginning, early stages of like what digital marketing, social marketing is looking like. How old were you then?
Do I want to age myself?
Roughly, just like roughly. I want to kind of know, 20s. Like, you know, early 20s, like coming down to LA. Where'd you live before that?
So I lived in just outside of London. Like coming to LA, I'd never been here before. And it was actually like coming to LA with MySpace. Like I was obsessed. I was obsessed with a couple of things. I was obsessed with marketing and brands and branding and advertising. And then I fell in love with LA. And it was actually when I came in my early 20s with MySpace, I was like, one day, like it kind of was the start of that aspiration to really have a solid career or build a business in marketing and live in Los Angeles. So along the way, I was always trying to engineer a full move. Tried and failed a couple of times. It wasn't and isn't super easy to get visas and green cards and all this sort of stuff. So yeah, that came a little bit later in the journey. But yeah, MySpace was I couldn't think of a better company at a better time to be the launch pad of what's been the foundation of my kind of career, which is digital social advertising. You know, that company at that time was kind of the explosion of everything. And to your point, you know, Facebook wasn't spoke about in the first year or something like that I was there. And then it started getting talked about and we started to see kind of like the impact Facebook was having on kind of like daily users and stuff like this. And I kind of say this about MySpace, like I have such a place in my heart for MySpace and amazing people that work there, like super talented, but just really cool people as well. MySpace did everything right. And then Facebook stripped out that just one really easy bit of just an update. And so MySpace, I mean, it still exists now, right? It's gone through quite a few evolutions, but it's a creative platform. It's a platform for creators, artists, bands, all that sort of stuff. And that's probably what it should have always been. Do you see what I mean? It was the first, you know, first big like online social network where the average person could write an update and their friends could view it. But it was complicated. You had to customize your page. You had to do this. You had to do that. So
you had to move your top friends around, you know, like you had to like custom code the background skins and stuff, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So I eventually left MySpace and went to AOL. Again, another behemoth in the world of digital. So I was working across their owned and operated properties as well as their performance network. Again, great company. I came over to LA with them a couple of times as well. Actually tried and applied for a job in LA with AOL. Got the job, but then they didn't support the visa process. My first attempt at moving to LA properly. But again, AOL taught me a lot because, you know, the owner operated properties was a very similar thing to MySpace. It's a website, it's a, you know, platform that you own. But then I started to really understand the performance network side of things. And it's actually funny, the evolution, because my next move was to a company called Turn after AOL, which did, you know, it was a marketing media, but also technology platform. So it was a DSP and a DMP. So demand side platform, data management platform, for anyone who doesn't know. So it's the marketing strategy, the media strategy, but also the technology that would power things like programmatic, CTV, all these things, which were really quite new at the time. And so when I look at those moves from MySpace, one of the catalysts to leaving was Facebook, right? So the real explosion of like the broad, just social communication kind of platforms. And then AOL, the thing that really started to chip into AOL's success was programmatic, because that was coming up as like efficiencies and we can do this at scale. So the performance network side of things started to struggle. And then Turn, was, you know, really all in on kind of the strategy, but media buying through these programmatic channels. We did social and digital, and again, like CTV, digital out of home, which were really new at the time. You know, I remember selling a connected TV campaign into Toyota, and it's like, it's seamless, we can do this. And in the background, it's like spinning plates, trying to stitch things together to make any sense of the reporting, or, you know, what was it?
Yeah, attribution was not a thing.
No, exactly. The technology and the theory existed, but it was very early, right? So, you know, obviously now it's advanced quite significantly. And then with Term, they are the company actually that I moved out to San Francisco originally with to work on the US brands. And so that was about 10 years ago now I moved to the US. So lived in San Francisco where their head offices were based. Didn't love it in San Francisco, I'll be honest. And then made the move down to LA about a year later. I was really fortunate. Again, amazing team. Work with brands like Toyota, Kraft, Lexus, Disney, and some of the really big agency groups, and access to their brands as well. So I, again, like really good exposure to really big and exciting brands, as well as some smaller brands, you know, overseeing all their digital, social, connected TV, all of this. And it was at that time when I eventually got my green card, I was like, you know, I was leading strategy across these brands, leading teams. And I was just getting disillusioned with a couple of things. One being part of because Turn got acquired by a company called Amobee. And it's big company, everything felt slow, right? Everything, and I was like a go-getting strategy, let's make shit happen kind of guy. So that started to really frustrate me. And then on the other side, it's, you know, I'm going into discuss digital and social strategy for a brand like Toyota, and the fragmentation of, you know, they've got 10 different creative agencies, they've got 10 different agencies for their paid, they've got 10 different agencies for this, the brand and the performance teams don't talk to each other, like the fragmentation of that world, it just baffled me. Like I was like,
as you go up market, it's, you know, let's stop there just for a second, because I want to add a little color. Like that's something even that we've been going through the last couple of years in our agency now is, you know, generally our bread and butter being like medium sized retailers, you know, like 10 million plus, you know, but 10 to 50 million or something, like, you know, and that's big for a lot of people, all the way down to $1 million businesses, you know, trying to work with us, like that would be where we're at. And then having, you know, the opportunity to work with like the Nestle's of the world, some very large brands that have like, you know, or working with an agency that has 50 brands underneath it. And those 50 could be big, just completely different relationship, communication style, understanding what's happening behind the scenes. I mean, the content team and the branding team don't even talk to the ads or the media buying team. They're enemies in some ways, you know, not talking about any of them specifically, but just like in general, like they're all fighting for different budgets at a company. And you know, they're all just like competing, and they're trying to fight for like, you know, internally, they're trying to fight internally. And well, if you know anything about Amazon, on Amazon, the SEO, the advertising, the PPC, the content, the branding, they all work together on this platform. Mm-hmm. Like they're 100% hand in hand, like, oh, you're trying to advertise on pre-workout. Let me see if, or you're trying to like rank for pre-workout in SEO. Let me see if it rank. Let me see if how it does in PPC. Okay, let's take these results and see what happens. And so you're like very much working like with the written team and the branding team and the PPC team on an Amazon business. But you go up market, you work with these teams that are like not so small, or they don't have those types of conversations. And it's like, I mean, it's very hard to win. And if you're like a kind of guerrilla warfare, like, let's try this, it can be very cumbersome and just hard to win. So like, if, you know, just like an attorney or a lawyer will say, I don't want to take that case, I don't think I'm going to win. Sometimes working with the brands, you know, they can be too big where I'm just like, look, I don't think we're going to find success here if these are the metrics and this is how we're going to do it, you know? And that can be something that's maybe never crossed someone's mind to be like, look, this company is literally too big to win with this strategy. Like with how fast everything's moving, you know, if you're going to hold me to those, I don't think we'll win. So, I mean, I can talk about that forever, but I just wanted to add a little color, like, very much is the difference. So like as a career person, you were getting like, you know, to a better job, bigger brands, better job, bigger brands, better job, bigger brands, and then getting disillusioned by being like, now that I'm here, these people don't have a clue up here what's going on. Like, I want to be doing the stuff that's like, you know, current. I want to be the best e-commerce manager I can be. Like, I want to be the best the best advertising guy, and I'm literally having to go through red tape. Like, these other smaller brands, at least on Amazon, we've been able to win with small brands all day long because they're willing to try the different strategies we're implementing and move fast, and the bigger companies are slow.
Yeah, no, 100%. And you mentioned it there, like, it's misaligned incentives within the brand's own company and then the agencies, right? What you're trying to do, and I don't mean bad intentions, just misaligned incentives, but what you're trying to do is, well, I look after this piece of the pie. I'm only focused on that. I need to secure my budget, showcase why I'm the thing that's driving the ROI, and kind of fuck everything else. And it's like, it doesn't work like that. It shouldn't work like that. And it's still wild to me that that's how most of these big companies are set up, where everything is fragmented. And
they companies, like, kind of, they're set up to where they're like, we want this department to speak for why they're worth the budget, and we want this department to say why they're worth it. And then you start creating all this competition internally.
Yeah.
Which makes no sense.
No, exactly. Exactly. So you're totally right. This kind of disillusion with that side, and just this overwhelming sense of like, this could be done so much better. And that was really the tipping off point for starting Mint in 2019 is, you know, I want to work with brands on a different scale, right? But what I want to build is a team whereby everything is interconnected, right? And we focus on performance marketing. Like, we exist to drive revenue, like profitable, scalable, sustainable revenue. But that is brand, that is performance, that is all the different aspects. It interconnects. And so that was the tipping off point for my entrepreneurship journey, which, like I said, you know, I loved the companies I worked at. I worked with incredibly smart people. I wasn't necessarily pursuing this idea throughout my 20s or early 30s of like, I'm definitely going to go and do that. I loved what I did. Like, I had so much opportunity, had so much fun, traveled a lot, worked with amazing brands, amazing people. So really it wasn't like this desire to be an entrepreneur. It was actually a desire to
be an awesome marketer.
In the end, it was. Yeah, exactly. And that so happened that, well, to do that, I'm going to start my own company because I don't see anybody else doing it. And I think as well, having moved to LA, you know, meeting the people that I'd met, I started to get to know local brand owners. And also, you know, I'm a Brit, if you can't tell from the accent, not Australian, living in England. England's like phenomenal place, great talent over there. But LA did bring out this sense of you can do whatever you want kind of thing. I question sometimes if I'd stayed in England, whether I would have done that. You know, I think it's a very powerful thing that American culture has and LA culture has of, you know, there is that can do anything mindset. Do you see what I mean? Yep. There's a lot of entrepreneurs. There's a lot of that kind of thinking. So those couple of things happening and where I was in my life and the move to America definitely was a big catalyst for that. Started Mint, 2019, with that vision of having a true kind of integrated omnichannel. We don't do Amazon, by the way. It's the one thing we don't do, Amazon and SEO, because there's specialties around that, but we really focus on, you know, performance marketing across brand. So we do influencer, UGC ads, paid social, paid search, all the kind of paid media channels, and then email, SMS, conversion rate optimization. So it's kind of that acquisition retention flywheel that we have like our products and services really wrapped around.
We spend a lot of time learning that side as well. Like, as an agency now that's going on 9 years old, I've got a plethora of brands that I own as well that we're building, you know, percentage owners in or different things like that. And the off Amazon side is a really big part of it. If we're getting paid for Amazon to grow a brand on Amazon, and it used to be more so that someone built a brand just for Amazon, and now it's more like this is a channel of what you're building overall. And, you know, how does it tie in? If you're running great Facebook ads and or TikTok and Facebook and Instagram, retargeting it and, you know, getting them into your email list and doing all these types of things, how many of that percentage is coming to Amazon? They're doing it, right? So it's just a matter of like, are we capturing them when they get there? Are we double paying on ads to get them there? You know, it makes your Facebook marketing look better when you're actually getting the attribution right on the Amazon side, because then it's, you know, a third of it or a fourth of it is ending up on Amazon to buy, and all of those things. So spend a ton of time understanding how to essentially plug a marketplace and what's happening there into the rest of the ecosystem. But like what you're doing well off of what we call off Amazon, that same ecosystem exists in Amazon. That's one of the main differences, is that the marketplaces kind of have everything in there, from from email to the media buying to SEO and in the listings and the content to now they've got Amazon Live and Amazon Posts and Amazon Inspire, I think, which is like TikTok. So they're trying to make a lot of it native here, but it's the same principles, just like, you know, how they exist over here, essentially.
Yeah.
So no, it's something that at the beginning, you're right, it was everyone in their own bucket. And so doing what I did was like, you know, arguing with Facebook ads guys, a brand is hiring me and I'm trying to work on the same, trying to be on the same team, on the same page. And being like, look, attribution might not be there, but that doesn't mean it doesn't work. And so if you have the ability to, you know, anyway, I digress because I can talk about it forever. But no, understanding, you know, what are all of the little dials that you can turn on with a brand? You know, there's so many, really, that when it comes down to it.
Yeah, there definitely is, you know, to reemphasize the point, it's, there's so many and it's all interconnected. And my philosophy to marketing is always, you know, it's consumer first. Like, let's not forget what we're trying to do. You know, we get so wrapped up in as marketers,
what we wanted to do,
like the tools, the platforms, the data, like super important stuff. Don't get me wrong, right? But the person you're trying to sell your stuff to doesn't give a shit about any of that. They're living their lives and they go on Amazon to do their shopping and they go on Facebook to chat to their mom and they go on Instagram to like pictures and TikTok to watch. They're not. Think consumer first. The platforms, the tools, everything else is like that's they're tools for us to use. And I think we get very insular as marketers, and I see it all the time. It's like, don't get me wrong, you need to be a specialist. If you're running paid ads, you need to know as much as you can know about how to maximize that algorithm, right? But broad speaking, I think we become too insular of the channels and how we think as marketers in terms of the platforms, the tactics, the stuff. And we don't think enough, or maybe that's wrong. We should always be thinking first and foremost, the consumer, right? How do we capture attention?
Not enough emotional thinking as marketers and more logic. Like, you know, we're just so dialed into the data and attribution trail and the media that we're showing, the content that we're showing, instead of like, how does this make them feel? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. How does it make them feel? Like tweaking your messaging accordingly. And, you know, I mean, attribution, you mentioned it. I don't know if we want to go off on that tangent. Like, attribution never will be perfect, right? It's actually interesting to me, you know, post iOS 14, we lost a ton of data. Amazon's always been difficult when it's like, they're the black box of data. I know it's improving at the moment. I'd actually be keen to get your thoughts on some of that stuff. But it's like, we have more tools available to us now than we ever have. Collectively, we have more data. It might not all be going into Facebook like it used to, but was it accurate then? Like, if I think back to 2004, 5, 6, like early 2000s in marketing, we have more collective data available to us now than we did to make decisions. But I think always thinking consumer centric is super important. To round out the story piece, by the way, Mint, because I know we mentioned this before we started recording, but Mint actually just got acquired today.
Yes.
So we're now Flight Performance. So the company that acquired us is founded by Stephen Bartlett and Oliver Yonchev. So Stephen Bartlett founded Social Chain Agency in the UK. He sold and exited from that business and co-founded Flight Story with Oliver Yonchev, who was an MD of Social Chain. He grew the US business. They now run a company called Flight Story, which is a marketing media comms agency group. They have a content studio team. They have a press, there's a PR agency, a Web3 agency, and now ours as a performance agency. And as we're on a podcast, if anyone is into podcasts, Stephen runs the podcast Diary of a CEO, which is massive. I think one of the world's biggest.
I've definitely seen it. Like I consume that one. So
yeah.
And I'm not all over the place, but he has a great podcast.
Yeah. His podcast is incredible. I recently launched one called Bite Sized, and you know, when I'm talking to Steve, who runs I think the biggest podcast in Europe, and it's not far from being the biggest. I don't want to get his data wrong. And my little podcast, and I'm showing him my very small metrics. And he's got a team of 30 around him just to manage the podcast. But yeah, so it's an incredibly big day for us as well. We share the same philosophies on marketing and building teams and agency culture and everything else. So that's kind of, we've jagged off, but that's my story from where I started.
No, I absolutely love it. And what a compliment or an accomplishment, you know, to be acquired by founders that have created great companies before, you know? So I think who the team you join is equally as amazing. Before I go into some of the next part here, I got some questions for you. Shout out again to our sponsor. Finding expert software developers doesn't have to be difficult, especially when you visit fullscale.io, where you can build a software team quickly and affordably. Use the Fullscale platform to define your technical needs and then see what available developers, testers, and leaders are ready to join your team. Visit fullscale.io to learn more. Okay, so talk to me a little bit about the difference in performance marketing and growth marketing. Can you break that down as if like you're not talking to another marketer, and really like to anyone listening, like we hear these terms kind of turned around. You've mentioned performance marketing several times, but to someone that might not know, today's title is how to dominate your growth marketing strategy, and we're talking about Flight Performance being a performance based agency. What are kind of the difference in these two things? Are they the same thing? How do they work together? How do you think about that as a brand?
Yeah, It's interesting, actually. First and foremost, performance, right? The way I think about performance. Performance I don't know the dictionary or classification of it, but the way we think about it is performance is producing a result, right? That result doesn't, I think in the world of performance marketing, and yes, it's a big part of what we do, it's very linked to that sale, right? And that's true. Like our job is to grow a brand's revenue and grow it profitably and sustainably. But performance can also be brand awareness. It can also be, just see what I mean? So performance for me, or the way we think about being performance marketers, is we're trying to elicit a result off the back of what we're doing for our brands. So that's kind of my philosophy on take of how I think about performance and why we're, Flight Performance. We're trying to drive outcomes, like business outcomes for the brands that we're working with. I think the way I would think about growth and performance marketing, I don't know, the two get thrown around kind of interconnected, and I'm probably guilty of doing that. I would say it's a bit of a mindset thing, right? And if I think about agency overall, there's agencies who deliver services, and there's growth performance agencies who are hyper-focused on delivering outcomes, right? So I think growth and performance are probably very interlinked in terms of what they are. I don't know if this is necessarily true. Like growth agencies, typically their mindset is kind of like holistic growth. You see a lot of like growth CMOs or kind of like fractional growth CMOs. It's the holistic growth plan. Right. Whereas a performance team could just be your Facebook performance team or your Google performance team. Right. So, I think a couple of things there, like you've got agencies that are, we deliver a service for you. Right. And I think that's a lot of the incumbent big agencies. They're not hyper-focused on performance and growth, even if they say they are. I've worked with them. Not to say they're not good at what they do. Right. They fit the need for what they have. And there's great people there. But for me, growth is that omni-channel, integrated, holistic. How do we grow your brand? And then for me, performance is, it's any aspect of driving an outcome for your business.
Got it. I think that makes a lot of sense to me. And I think it would make sense to anyone listening too, just understanding like, okay, you're looking for growth. What performance agency or who are going to work with to grow that area, right? That specific area. So let's go, and I think one thing that Daniel was saying, is the performance could be sales, but it also could be brand awareness. It could be impressions. It could be email signups. It could be newsletter signups. It could be, subscribing on a YouTube button. It could be, any number of things as far as the outcome, that you're wanting. And I think a lot of times when brands get, upset working with an agency or with a team. Let's say that like both teams are actually working, one of them's not ghosting or something, but like, let's say that they're working together and they're not happy with it. A lot of times is around communication around what those performance indicators were. You know, so a lot of it just comes down to not being able to speak to some of the things that we're doing and getting on the same page and really being dialed into like what those performance things are. You know, a smaller brand is very much focused on sales and ROI and direct ROAS and am I spending a dollar to make 10? And the bigger brands have a completely different aspect on it. And they're like, look, I'm just here to make friends. Like, you know, I don't really need them to buy from me. They're like, I just want people to know who I am. I just want people to like think positively about our brand or think positively about me. And I'm just throwing this party because I want everyone to have a good time. And, you know, yeah. I'm making an analogy here, but like, you know, the bigger brands that have the budget and the dollars are thinking in that way. And the smaller brands are thinking like, I need like, you know, people to walk in and buy. And so it really comes down to communication, I think, around these topics.
It definitely does. But it's that kind of catch 22, right? Of like, you're a smaller brand, you need sales to be able to continue as a brand. But to do that, you don't have a big audience. So what you're having to do is annihilate a small pool of people with very low funnel activity. Right. So trying to justify to a smaller brand, like the benefit of building brand awareness. And I'm not saying like to run, I'm not talking tactics in an ad platform here of like traffic campaigns. I'm talking just conceptually from a marketing standpoint, you need people to know about you to have any chance of someone buying from you. Right. And so you have to think that through in terms of your marketing strategies, your creative, your executions. But smaller brands don't like to do that because some of those tactics aren't as immediate ROI driving, right? But that's where a lot of people get stuck. And, you know, as a performance agency, you know, I think we've been really successful in unlocking that, helpfully, but it is about the communication. It is about, and it goes back to that integrated aspect, right? If you're building awareness and intent, but not harnessing it down to sales, what's the point? You have to do the two in tandem. So it's like smaller brands struggle with that. Then the bigger brands have to be doing that. It's a little bit easier because they've got their revenue machine. But again, they should be looking at, well, how is that informing? You know, if you're a bigger brand and you're doing brand awareness, kind of like partnership stuff or brand awareness activity and whatever else, community building, there's lots of different buckets of it, but you're still doing it to ultimately get more customers. Drive a sale. Yeah. Like anyone who says they're not is lying. Right? You don't just do it just to be nice.
It's like,
how do you harness it?
Silly analogy. I like to relate it. A lot of what we do in business and marketing to dating and, you know, thinking about like, it's all good and gravy. You go on a date with a girl, you know, go on date one, date two, date three, they're getting to know who you are. They're getting to know, they're aware of you. They like, you know, what your style is. They know what your like, you know, food preferences are maybe after a couple of dates. But every guy knows that you can only go like, you know, 3, 4, 5 dates without making a move and you're going to be in the friend zone and you're never going to get the kiss, right? Or whatever. So, same thing on the other side. That's like, eventually you have to go for that sale. So it's one thing to be known and be seen and like, you know, get a chance to get the customers. But at one point, the point of all of it is to get the kiss, you know, so, or in that way to be known and see if it's a fit. So
yeah,
I think that's where, a lot of times when you get that big top of funnel brand awareness, you're spending a ton of time on those things. Like in digital has made it easier than ever. But then like, okay, so like, what are we actually doing with that traffic? What are we actually like, what is our intent behind that? Yeah. Is it to grow subscribe and save numbers on Amazon? Is it to get a bunch of, you know, get our first viral post as an agency? Is it to drive sales? I think at the end of the day, it's always to drive sales. And for me, it's been a very confusing thing. Like 10 years ago when I was freelancing as an e-commerce manager, I was working with Adidas and Suiza and some of these European brands. That had massive agencies. I was just getting white labeled behind one of them to do Amazon, you know, back in the day. And I just, I mean, it blew my mind because I'm someone that's a band guy that can exist on like no money on the road on tour. Like, you know, that's how I can run a budget. I'm a simple guy. I don't need a lot of material items. So I'm always good with my money. I always manage my money correctly, like, you know, efficiently. And to be behind some of these big agencies, these big companies, and see that, like, well, they didn't really care about ROI or ROAS. They really just wanted awareness on the platform. And they needed to spend $100,000 a month in December, or they were going to lose that budget next year. And my mind was like blown, because I'm just like, well, I could, you know, get the same amount of sales with $20,000. Like,
yeah.
I'm seeing so many inefficiencies. Let me like tweak it. Let me fix this. Why would we waste $80,000? Why would we do that? You know? Yeah. And, it was just like, they cared. Their performance was that they cared about eyeballs. They needed to spend the money. They cared about impressions and clicks and eyeballs. The sales was like an after effect. And I remember just being kind of humbled in that moment when, like, I had put all this information together and kind of made a presentation about what I thought was going on. And they simply were just like, well, we just don't really care about sales.
Yeah.
You know, and it was a little silly, but at the same time, just like an eye opener to a new marketer of like, you know, there's different goals that people have out there, you know, better or worse as a brand. One, how do I communicate better what I think they should be doing? Two, understanding that not everyone operates like a small brand, and you just have to think a little bit differently if you're trying to work with an Adidas of the world, right?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, been in those exact same situations.
Okay, so question for you, like, we're talking about growth marketing, we're talking about performance marketing, like, what are some, you know, what are some actionable advice or insights you can give to like a newer brand, that's trying to come up with like a growth strategy, like growth marketing? What are some actionable things they can do to kind of be better?
Yeah. I mean, from a growth strategy standpoint, I think it's really, it's a lot about knowing your numbers, right? Knowing your margins, knowing your customer acquisition costs, LTV. I know there's a lot of conversation about the right metrics to look at, contribution margin, all these things. I think if it's a newer brand, right, the place to start and the thing that will have the biggest impact is two things. Like, I always think about foundation first, right? Website, email, SMS, right? Before you turn taps on for paid and start driving traffic and stuff, you know, really think through your brand positioning. What does your website say? Is it easy to buy from? Is it very clear against the desired kind of consumer or customer? Is it very clear what you're providing, right? Then having the right email, SMS, the subscriber stuff. So when you do acquire customers, you know, I've got this phrase of like never paying for a customer twice, right? Once you've got them, how are you building loyalty? How are you looking to retain them? And then from there, like, you look at influencers pay, kind of the acquisition, outward marketing side of things. It's all about the creative. It's all about the creative. And creative is dictated by your product, your positioning, but also who's your target consumer. You know, it's like, if I'm a fashion brand, well, everyone wears clothes, so everyone. I'm a food brand, well, everyone eats, so it's everyone. And I think you have to break it down into these personas, because that dictates your creative, which then gives you a platform for creative testing, right? So I think know who you're going after from a consumer standpoint. Use that to inform your creative strategy for when you are looking to work with influencers, when you're looking to build ads and run paid. But initially, it's really making sure the foundation's in a good place. You know,
I think that's great advice.
I'll go back to something we mentioned in terms of like the brand awareness piece. I also think there's a difference, and there's maybe this is a hot take, but it's like I'm a fan of building brands, but there's you know. And people say, oh, who cares about building a brand unless you're 20 million? I think you're building a brand from day one, unless maybe you're a utility. And actually that's where you can get into. If I'm, I don't know, just a functional utility in people's lives, that's very different than selling a lifestyle brand or something else. So depending on the type of brand you are or product you're selling,
like a wastebasket or something, you know, exactly. That's like,
Yeah, yeah. I was trying to think of a good example. I was going to say
like
knives,
a Dyson fan. I think of a fan, right? Like Dyson is a brand known in fans. Like, you know, it's a thing in your house that cools you down. But we know of the higher end ones. We think of them like, you know, yeah. Dyson fan is like the high end. But I don't, there's not a trash can or a wastebasket brand that comes to mind. There isn't one that exists. There might be an opening. But you know, it's just a utility thing. It serves a purpose. It's, you know.
Exactly. So, you know, I think based on your product, what you're selling, it might differ, but yeah, foundations first, creative, really understand who your target consumer is. If you don't have at least two or three variations of your target consumer, I think you're just being too broad. You're being too broad with your messaging. And these days with the way that platforms do work, it's going to be quite difficult to know what's working and not, because you're not giving yourself parameters. You want losing creative because it showcases the winning creative, right? Like that's what you want early on. And that's like a concept that we talk to our clients about. Like we creative test and the losers are really beneficial. It tells us what not to do. It's like narrowing the funnel down, right? Mm-hmm. Any brand when they're starting, they're going to do a lot of things that don't work. You can fast track that by working with teams. Like I'm sure if a brand comes to you on Amazon, you can fast track their learning because you've got so much retained learnings. We can fast track brands' learnings across Facebook, Google, email, influencers, all those learnings, but you're still going to have to do some stuff that doesn't work.
We're going to save you some of the learning curve. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You'll shorten that learning curve pretty aggressively. But yeah, that would be my starting.
No, I think that's amazing. And on the advertising side, you know, it's a big part of what we do on Amazon. For brands, sure, there's the setup and there's the operations. We literally help them with supply chain, getting their products prepped right, priced right, you know, the right bags, the right keywords in the listings. But the PPC and the advertising, which is really direct response marketing, where someone types in, you know, men's black hoodie size large and men's black hoodies that are large should show up, right? It's like exactly what they're typing in. It's not like what's the best hood, what are the top trending urban hoodies for men, like that's a Google query, you know, or something like that, or a Pinterest. But like on Amazon, it's men's black hoodie or Flight Story hoodie, for example, the one you're wearing. You're going to type that in directly to find it. But you know, when we start out with a brand, let's say they've got 20 different SKUs they're starting with, 20 different designs, each of those might have 100, 200, 1,000 keywords that we're starting with, you know, and we're starting with these broad buckets. And you know, 2 months in, that 1,000 has gone down to 100. You know, we remove 900 bad ideas, so to speak. And it just gets better as you go. You start getting it dialed in. Sometimes even you type in men's black large hoodie and it's exactly what you're selling and people are clicking on it and not buying. Well, what's that telling you? What's going on? Is it your price point? Is it your images? Is it the model? Is it, you know, the reviews on it? Like, you know, something else is going on. So the no's and the fails teach us just as much as the ones that are doing well and converting. So very similar process, even if it's you know, kind of visual versus direct response, they definitely have an impact. In the failures or the no's teach you as much as the yeses.
100%. Yeah. One of the worst questions, and I understand it, but one of the worst questions a brand can ask me is, when do we stop testing? As if there's like, okay, we'll test for a little bit, then we're done testing. It's always, you know, you're always looking to pit things against each other to see what elevates and what doesn't. And you just minimize the impact of the stuff that doesn't, right? Like obviously you're not going to run things that aren't, but always, always be testing.
I honestly speak on Amazon a bit, and that's something that almost always comes out of my mouth at some point or another, is that like, at least Amazon, this is a testing platform. If you don't have the stomach for testing, trying new things, trying the new things that Amazon comes out with, posts or live or Amazon Inspire, or trying the attribution, or trying, let's try this photo versus this photo. We switch out photos all the time, or trying different keywords. Okay, we got these 10 keywords ranking. These two aren't doing well. Switch them out. Let's try something else. If you don't have a stomach for that, like, it's not the platform for you. This isn't the game for you. This is, you know, you're asking me not to win immediately, you know? And so, I think that's something very good that you shared, As we're rounding up on time, I love to end the show like with a little bit of personal, just a personal question. One is just like, I know obviously you got acquired today and are now Flight Performance, but I love asking like, what's something that you're working on this year that you're really excited about? And that could be like perhaps what's going to happen next with, you know, joining a bigger team and things like that. But what's something in the business that you're excited about, you're working on? And then what's something as Daniel, the man, you know, the human being and living in LA, what's something that you're focused on this year that you're working on that you're excited about?
Yeah. So I'll start with Daniel, the person. I mean, lots, but I think one of my big goals is putting out more content, doing things like this. Like I said, I just launched my own podcast like a month ago, Bite Size, talking to brands. The whole concept is to provide actionable things that people listening can apply into their businesses today, right? So doing Bite Size, doing more podcasts, more speaking events, and putting more content out. You know, I've been working in this industry since 2004. I was at MySpace, AOL, Turn, worked with some huge brands, grown an agency, sold an agency. I feel like that I've probably got quite a bit of knowledge to impart on people who are maybe in some stage of the journey that I've been through. So that's a really big aspiration of mine, just to help others through all the things that I've learned, the things that have gone right, the things that have gone wrong. You know, so that's a big one. And yeah, from a business perspective, I mean, it's a really interesting time to ask me that on day one of Flight Performance. But, you know, I'm obviously super excited about that and all we can achieve. I think, you know, Steve and all in the Flight Story team, they're incredible entrepreneurs, incredible marketers, incredible operators. So I feel like we're attaching our little rocket ship onto their massive rocket ship. And so I'm looking to ride that wave. And really for us, it's like, it elevates our own kind of ceiling of what we think is possible within the company. You know, the type of work we're doing, the type of brands we're doing, just our vision and becomes bigger. And as well, just to talk about the singular vision now of like selling a company is hard and time consuming. So I think as well, just being able to have that finished, you know, it's like a 5-6 month process. So getting back to just doing what I love, which is yes, building businesses, but you know, it's really talking about marketing, talking about building teams, and just really giving my full focus behind everything we're doing at Flight Performance.
I love it. Thank you for sharing, Daniel. It's been awesome having you on the show. And I'll have to tune into Bite Size and see what you guys are doing. It'll be cool to see just like, you know, you telling and sharing some of the story about what's happening after getting acquired as an agency and joining such a big team, joining the rocket ship. I hope you share some of that on there. Because as another agency owner, it's something, you know, very interesting to me. Yeah. And something very real and relevant too. I think there's a lot of people out there that would really like to hear just kind of like what that means, like to bolt onto a big rocket ship and what that looks like and how you got there. Thanks again, Hustlers, for tuning in. And thanks again to our sponsor, Fullscale.io. Do you need to hire software engineers, testers, or leaders? Let Fullscale help. They have the people and the platform to help you build and manage a team of experts. At Fullscale, they specialize in building long-term teams that work only for you. Learn more when you visit Fullscale.io. Daniel, thanks again for being on the show. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, man.
Startup Hustle's brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.